Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 50.
We've got the travelers, Tang Monk, Sun Wukong, Zubaji, Sha Monk.
The usual crew.
They've just managed this incredibly dangerous crossing of the Tongchin River. Freezing cold, really perilous.
A major ordeal. And now they're heading west again, but still dealing with this harsh winter weather.
Yeah, and the passage kicks off with a short poem, which feels important, doesn't it? Sort of sets a mood.
It does. It talks about clearing the mind, maintaining purity, that kind of thing.
Which is interesting because it contrasts so sharply with the very physical, messy stuff they're about to run into.
Totally. That whole inner discipline versus outer chaos thing, it's central to this whole story.
And that outer chaos hits them pretty much straight away. After the river, bam, a massive mountain blocks their path.
A huge obstacle. And the text really makes you feel it. Difficult terrain, narrow passes, cliffs.
Dense rocks, steep ridges. Sounds awful to walk through.
Yeah.
Even worse for the poor horse, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. The language used is so evocative. Rocky piles like sitting tigers.
Ooh, I like that.
Ancient pines hanging like flying dragons. It gives the mountain this, like, fierce, almost alive feeling.
Predatory, almost.
Yeah. And then you add the sounds, roaring tigers mentioned later, gloomy clouds. There's this phrase, Usho.
What does that mean exactly?
Roughly, the peak clouds come over gloomily and fiercely. It makes the mountain itself feel, you know, hostile.
Okay, so it paints this picture of a really grim, dangerous place. Not somewhere you'd want to linger.
Absolutely not. And yet, in the middle of all this forbidding landscape, they spot something unexpected.
Something inviting.
Kind of. Down in a hollow on the mountain, they see buildings, towering buildings, quiet houses.
Okay, put yourself in their shoes. Exhausted, freezing, just crossed a deadly river, facing this monster mountain.
Yes, Tay.
Salvation. Food. Rest. Tang Monk's reaction is instant relief, right?
Totally. He wants to go there immediately. He thinks it's got to be a village, maybe a monastery, somewhere safe.
Like an oasis.
Exactly. But Wukong, he sees something completely different. His reaction is immediate, sharp.
What does he say?
He warns them straight off. He says the area has Suo Wei.
What you mean?
Ominous clouds, an evil aura swirling around. And he states it flat out, this is not a good place.
Wow. So, same building, same scene, totally different interpretation.
Yeah.
How does Wukong know? What lets him see the danger?
Well, this is classic Wukong, isn't it? His supernatural perception, his deep knowledge of demons and their tricks. He's been around the block.
He knows this isn't always straightforward.
Exactly. He knows monsters aren't just about brute force. Many are masters of illusion. They can conjure up these incredibly real-looking houses, towers.
Vivin.
Yeah, all that stuff, out of thin air, specifically to lure people in.
So these inviting buildings, they're not real, just a magical trick.
Precisely. Wukong even names a specific creature known for this, the Shen.
The Shen?
Yeah. He explains its vital energy, its cud, can create these mirages, layered buildings, even pools of water. It's like the creature projects a false reality.
Using its own life force. That's intense.
It is. It's deception rooted in the demon's very nature. And the danger is extreme. Wukong makes that very clear.
It's not just misleading then.
No, no. It's a deadly trap. Anyone lured in, the text says, even if there are thousands or tens of thousands of you.
Oh, wow.
Get swallowed whole in one gulp. Wukong calls the intention behind it most dangerous.
So what looks like a safe haven is actually like a monster's mouth waiting to snap shut.
You got it. It preys directly on their exhaustion and hunger. It shows that the dangers aren't always obvious, right? Sometimes the biggest threats look like the answer to your prayers.
And Wukong's ability to see past that, to sense the evil aura, is why he's so indispensable.
Absolutely. His advice is blunt. Stay away. Do not go in there.
But Tang Monk, he's still focused on his stomach, isn't he? He's really hungry.
He is. And here's that tension again. Spiritual quest versus basic human needs. Wukong's warning is clear, deadly illusion, but the monk's hunger is just overwhelming him.
So they disagree for a moment.
A bit, yeah. Wukong gets it. He knows the master is suffering, but he also knows the illusion is lethal. So he offers a practical solution.
A compromise.
Right. He says, okay, we cannot go to those buildings. They're too dangerous. But I'll go find food somewhere else. You guys wait here safely.
And before he leaves, he does that famous thing.
Ah, yes. The circle. He pulls out his golden cudgel.
The Shea. The magic staff.
The very one.
Yeah.
And he uses it to draw a circle on the ground. Around the monk, Baji, Sha Monk, the horse, the luggage, everything.
And he's very specific about what this circle means.
Extremely. He tells them, sit right in the middle, don't move. And this circle, he says, it's stronger than bronze walls and iron fortifications.
So not just a line in the dirt, it's a magical barrier.
Totally. He promises no tigers, leopards, wolves, and most importantly, no monsters will dare come near it.
Sounds like Fort Knox.
Shit.
But there's a catch, right? A big one.
The crucial condition. And he really hammers it home. They absolutely must not step outside the circle.
Meaning?
If you leave the circle, you will certainly suffer a deadly hand. He repeats the warning multiple times.
Like 10 million times, this is my utmost instruction.
Exactly. It's not a suggestion. It's life or death, tied directly to trusting him and staying put.
And the others, Tang Monk included.
They agree. Maybe remembering past times Wukong saved them. They settle down inside the circle, a moment of trust, despite the hunger.
Placing their faith in his unseen power.
And his understanding of dangers they just can't perceive.
Okay, so they're hopefully safe inside this magic circle. Wukong takes off on his cloud.
Yep, zooms off, heading south to find a village, look for some real food, no illusions this time.
And the village he finds. It sounds quite different from the mountain.
Yeah, a real contrast. Still deep winter, mind you. Ancient trees, houses, snow everywhere, ice on ponds. But it feels grounded, lived in.
You get these little details, don't you? Green bamboo, dark pines, thatched huts, a snow-covered bridge.
Narcissus flowers by a fence, icicles, even a scent of flowers on the cold wind, though they're hidden by snow. It feels, you know, real. Humble, cold, but real.
Unlike those creepy illusion buildings.
Exactly. And he meets an old man outside his house. Simple clothes, leaning on a staff, looking at the sky.
Very human. And didn't dog bark at him?
Yeah, a little dog. Just an everyday detail. Reinforces the ordinariness of the place.
So Wukong approaches, politely asks for some food for his master. Standard procedure for a monk.
But the old man's reply is weird, at least to Wukong.
What does he say?
He tells Wukong he's going the wrong way. Says he's 1,000 li, like hundreds of miles off the main westward road.
Wukong was...
He insists, no, my master's right back there. I just left him. It hasn't even been long enough to brew tea. He says he'll be back in a flash.
And that's what spooks the old man, isn't it?
Exactly. Hearing Wukong talk about zipping back and forth across hundreds of miles in minutes, he freaks out, thinks Wukong's a ghost.
Oh, dear. So he tries to run away.
Tries to bolt inside. But Wukong needs that food for his master. He's persistent. Grabs the old man.
Gently, I hope.
Well, the text says he grabs him, urges him, just give me some alms quickly. And the old man starts making excuses. It's inconvenient. Go somewhere else. I only have a tiny bit of rice cooking. 3 sheng. It's not ready.
But Wukong's not buying it.
No, not really. He comes back with the proverb, basically. Better to stick with one place than wander around.
Smart.
And he lays it on thick, says his master will starve if he has to go looking elsewhere. He insists he'll wait.
This must be getting frustrating for the old man.
Apparently so. He gets annoyed, maybe still scared, and starts whacking Wukong with his staff. Repeatedly.
Ouch. Except it's Wukong.
Right. The blows do absolutely nothing. Wukong just stands there, probably finds it amusing. He even jokes about it.
What does he say?
He says something like, okay, keep hitting. I'll count the blows and take 1 sheng of rice for each hit.
Oh my goodness. That would terrify me.
It terrifies the old man. This combination of being unhurtable and having this weird sense of humor. The old guy drops his staff, runs inside screaming, ghosts, and locks the door. His family hears him and locks all the doors and windows too.
So Wukong's left outside, locked out. The polite approach failed spectacularly.
Totally failed. Conventional alms-seeking is a bust. So he's standing there, thinking, was the old man lying about the food?
He suspects he might have been.
Yeah. And this leads him to think, different approach needed. He reflects on this idea. Tao transforms the wise. Buddhism transforms the foolish. Maybe meaning, like, politeness didn't work on this stubborn guy, so time for something else.
Something less conventional.
Definitely less conventional. He decides to use a spell.
Which one?
Invisibility. The sin. He uses it to just slip right into the kitchen, unseen.
And what does he find?
Bingo. His suspicion was right. There's a pot on the stove bubbling away with half a pot of cooked rice. So Wukong, now invisible, just takes his alms bowl.
The one he carries for begging.
That's the one. Shoves it into the pot and fills it right up to the brim.
He didn't just take a small portion then. He took a lot.
He took a full bowl. Enough for the group, presumably.
Bowl full. And then
he flies back on his cloud to where the others are waiting in the circle. Mission accomplished in a way.
Sun Wukong, drawn that protective circle, told them very clearly, Tang Monk, Pigsy, and Sandy, stay inside this simple plan. Wait.
Yeah, but simple plans and this group.
What?
Especially Pigsy. Don't always mix, do they?
Huh. Not usually. And, well, the impatience kicks in pretty much right away.
Yeah.
Tang Monk is actually the first one getting fidgety.
Yeah, he's looking around, wondering where Monkey is with the food. They're hungry. They're tired of just sitting there.
He's ready to move on. And that's Pigsy's opening, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. He jumps right on that. Immediately starts complaining about being stuck in the circle.
Complaining is maybe putting it mildly.
Yeah. He calls it sitting in jail. That's the term in the text.
Sitting in jail.
And he's not just griping. He's actually questioning if it even works. Like, he says, you know, if some real danger shows up, tigers, wolves, monsters, how is this line in the dirt going to stop them?
Which, you know, from a purely physical standpoint.
It's a fair question. Very practical, very Pigsy. He's not thinking magic. He's thinking, you know, walls, yeah. Teeth, claws.
So what's his brilliant idea then?
His suggestion is, look, forget the circle. Let's just keep walking west. Monkey super fast, he'll catch up. Plus, he says his feet are getting cold just sitting there.
Always about comfort with Pigsy.
Well, yeah, and Tang Monk hears all this. He caves, bad luck coming. He agrees to Pigsy's plan. And just like that, they step out of the circle. Sandy leads the horse. Pigsy grabs the luggage.
And off they walk. So much for protection.
And they haven't gone far all when they see a building right by the road. Multi-story. It faces south, has these big white walls and a sort of V-shape, an elaborate gatehouse decorated. It looks important.
But nobody's around.
No one outside. The gate's even slightly open.
Okay, so Pigsy sees this.
And immediately jumps to conclusions. He figures, this must be some rich guy's place. A duke, a minister, someone important.
And everyone's inside keeping warm, right? That's his logic.
Yep, because it's cold. Makes perfect sense to him.
But Tang Monk is still a bit cautious.
Oh, yeah. He tells Pigsy, hey, be careful. Don't barge in and offend anyone. You know, basic politeness.
Even as they're ignoring Monkey's major instruction.
Ha.
Right. The irony. And Pigsy, he puffs himself up, says something like, don't worry, master. I've learned some manners on this trip.
Learned in manners. Pigsy. Okay.
Claims he's quite refined now. So he volunteers to go check it out himself, leaves his rake outside, straightens his tunic.
Makes a show of it.
Totally. Walks in. The text says, Lu, Oot. Like a real gentleman.
In fines.
Nothing. The main hall is empty. No furniture. Nobody.
So he keeps going.
He does. Go through a passageway into another bigger building behind the first one. Looks up, sees an upstairs window, half open, with a yellow silk curtain.
Ah, so maybe someone is home after all.
That's what Pigsy thinks. He figures, must be someone sleeping upstairs, keeping warm under the covers.
So he heads upstairs, pulls back that curtain. Expecting a cozy scene.
And it is absolutely not cozy.
What does he find?
Just bones. A heap of bones lying on an ivory bed.
Whoa, just bones.
Yep. And the text makes a point of saying how huge they are. Skull as big as a basket, leg bones 4 or 5 feet long. This was something. Or someone.
Yeah.
Enormous. Yikes. Okay, so Pigsy must freak out, right?
Well, he's startled at first, obviously. The text says nah, like a jolt. But then something really interesting happens.
What's that?
Instead of just running away screaming, he gets emotional. He actually starts crying, looking at the bones, sighing.
Pigsy, crying over bones. That's unexpected.
It really is. And he even comes out with this this little poem, a lament for whoever this was.
What does he say? What's the gist?
He reflects that this must have been someone really powerful once. You know, a general, a marshal, a hero in their time, someone strong and dominant.
Okay.
But now... just bones, exposed, forgotten. No family, no soldiers mourning them. It's this sudden, surprisingly deep moment from Pigsy. He's thinking about mortality, how power fades, maybe even sees a bit of himself. While he's having this moment, this reflection, he sees a flash of light from behind the curtain.
Yeah, so someone is hiding.
That's what he thinks for a second. He looks again. Nah, it's just sunlight coming through a window.
Okay, false alarm.
But while he's looking, his eyes land on something else. There's a table nearby, a painted one, and there's clothes just sort of thrown on it.
Clothes? Like regular clothes?
Specifically, 3 embroidered vests or tunics. Nice ones, the text says. Silk, embroidered.
3 of them.
Interesting.
Very. So Pigsy,
yeah.
Being Pigsy, grabs them.
Of course he does.
Takes them downstairs. Goes back outside to Tang Monk and Sandy.
And reports.
Tells them, okay, house is empty, basically haunted, found these huge bones, kind of creepy. And then, oh, by the way, I found these 3 really nice vests.
Just casually throws that in.
And immediately justifies taking them. calls it good fortune, a beer, like they just lucked out. Said they need them because it's cold. Suggest they put them on right now.
Okay, now Tang Monk has to object, right? This is blatant.
Oh, he objects strongly. Very clearly states the Buddhist principle. Taking something openly or secretly, it's still theft.
Or deviance. Plain and simple.
He warns Pigsy, look, if someone finds out, we'll be accused of theft. He tells him, take them back, now.
And Pigsy's response?
He argues, says, nobody saw me, not even a chicken or a dog. He insists it's like he just found them lying around. Totally dismisses the theft angle.
He's really doubling down.
He is. So Tang Monk tries a different approach. He goes beyond human law. He says, okay, maybe no person saw you, but heaven sees everything.
Ah, the moral argument.
Exactly. He even quotes scripture. Basically, even if you do wrong in secret, the divine eye, like lightning, sees it all. He pleads with him, don't desire things that aren't rightfully yours. Ole.
That's a pretty serious warning. Scripture, divine judgment.
You'd think it would work. But Pigsy, nope.
He still won't listen.
Just brushes it off, makes a joke about how nice the vests are, how he's never seen embroidery like that, says he's just going to wear one to keep warm until Monkey gets back. That's all.
Unbelievable. And Sandy, what does he do?
Sandy just kind of goes along with it. Maybe he's cold too. Maybe Pigsy's enthusiasm is infectious. He agrees to wear one.
So two against one. Despite Tang Monk's warnings, his pleading.
They take off their robes, put on these nice embroidered vests.
Uh-oh, I have a bad feeling about this.
You should, because the moment they tighten the ties...
What happens?
Bam! They both just lose their balance, fall right over.
They just fall.
And it's the vests. They aren't just vests anymore. They instantly tighten, pinning their arms behind their backs, tight against their chests.
Whoa, like instantly bound.
Exactly. The text says they're bound better, tighter than if you used actual ropes.
Wow, okay. Tang Monk must be freaking out.
He is totally horrified, stamping his feet, blaming himself for giving in earlier. He rushes over, trying desperately to untie them, but the knots, the binding, it's impossible. He can't get them loose.
So Pigsy and Sandy are just stuck, tied up.
Tied up tight, and they start shouting, yelling for help, making a huge racket.
All that noise, right outside the creepy building.
Precisely. All the shouting immediately alerts the demon. The trap is sprung.
That building. The one that looks so innocent, where Tang Monk and the others took shelter.
Yeah.
It wasn't real. The text is clear it was a magical illusion, conjured up by a demon specifically, to lure people in, to capture them.
That's a huge insight right off the bat. So this demon's method isn't just like brute force out in the open. It's deception, creating something tempting to draw victims in.
Mm-hmm.
And the passage mentions the demon back in his cave. Here's these, what's the phrase? He'll hide. Sounds of grievance or maybe resentment.
Right, sounds grievance.
So he hears that, comes out to check, and, well, yep, trap worked. Several people are tied up.
And the capture itself sounds pretty quick. The demon just rounds up to the three of them. Tang Monk, Baji, Xia Seng, grabs the white horse, the luggage, and leads them straight into his cave. And once they're inside, he confronts Tang Monk. But what's interesting is his first accusation, right? He asks Tang Monk why he was... stealing clothes.
Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah.
But Tang Monk's answer, it tells you a lot about, you know, the group dynamics and how they actually got caught. He says, okay, we're pilgrims. I sent Wukong for food.
Mm-hmm.
But then he admits, and this is crucial, Bukan, basically, I didn't listen to his words, not to go near strange buildings. And then Tang Monk points the finger a bit, blaming Baji and Xia Seng's, you could say, love of small things or maybe petty desires.
So like they were tempted by the illusionary clothes.
That's the implication,
yeah.
That their attraction to those things is what really doomed them. And then, you know, he pleads for mercy, talks about their mission to get scriptures, promises to tell everyone how kind the demon could be if he lets them go.
And the demon's reaction to this heartfelt plea.
Not buying it. Not for a second.
No mercy then.
No, he just laughs and gets straight to the point. He says he knows the legend, explicitly quotes it.
Ah, the famous line, eating Tang Monk's flesh brings youth back.
Makes white hair black, lost teeth regrow, the whole deal. So for him, Tang Monk showing up isn't a reason for mercy. It's like winning the lottery. Incredible luck from his point of view.
Okay. And then he asks about Wukong.
Right. And this bit is just classic Badgie. Even though he's captured, probably stripped of his rake already.
Yeah, the text mentions stripping them later.
He still puffs himself up and declares really loudly, my elder brother is the great sage equal to heaven. Sun Wukong, the one who caused chaos in heaven 500 years ago. Still boasting.
You gotta love Baji sometimes. But here's where the text gives us a really crucial insight. It's not about the demon's outward reaction. It focuses on his internal response.
Oh, what does it say? It says he is greatly somewhat fearful or intimidated.
Greatly somewhat fearful. That's specific.
Yeah, it suggests a significant level of fear, but maybe not paralyzing terror. He thinks to himself, basically, oh man, I've heard about this guy forever. His immense power. And now he's involved. He didn't expect this.
That internal fear is really telling, isn't it? He knows the legend. He knows the power.
He's genuinely intimidated.
But he still decides to go ahead with his plan anyway. What does that suggest? Is he, like, banking on his own strength? Or maybe underestimating Wukong somehow?
That's the paradox, isn't it? Whatever the reason, his fear doesn't stop him. His immediate decision is tie up Tang monks securely, retie Baji and Sha Seng after taking their valuables, and wait for Wukong.
And his plan for Wukong is, well, the text is blunt.
It is very blunt and pretty chilling.
Yeah, wash them all at once, then put them in a cage to steam and eat. Yikes.
Yeah. It sets the stakes incredibly high. And gruesomely high. The source doesn't shy away from the demon's culinary intentions.
Okay. So the capture is complete. The text confirms. The three are bound, taken to the back. The horse is tied up, luggage stored away.
And the little demons, they're getting weapons ready. They're definitely expecting a fight when Wukong shows up.
Right. So while all that horror is unfolding, let's switch perspective back to Wukong. He's finished foraging. He's got the food bowl.
He's flying back. The text says he lands right on the slope where he left them, where he drew that protective circle.
And he finds
the circle. Still there. But Tang Monk, Baji, Sha Seng, gone. Vanished.
And the building they were near.
He looks back at the spot where it was supposed to be. Also gone. Just strange rocks at the base of the mountain. The whole illusion has disappeared.
So no building, no companions, just an empty circle and some rocks.
His conclusion is instant and grim. He says, you are Boden.
Needless to say, they've definitely met a cruel fate. He knows immediately.
No doubt in his mind, they've been captured. And he doesn't waste any time. He spots the horse's tracks.
Ah, tracks. Useful.
Yeah, leading westward from that spot. And he just starts following them right away.
Okay, so he's on the trail. What happens next?
Well, as Wukong is following these tracks, searching, probably feeling pretty agitated.
He'd think so.
He hears voices, and the text describes him encountering an old man and a young servant. They're on the north slope, the servant's carrying a plum branch.
Okay. A random encounter.
Seems like it at first. Wukong approaches, respectfully bows, and asks, you know, have you seen my master and companions pass this way?
And the old man's reaction.
It's interesting. A tautened, cold laugh. Not exactly warm and fuzzy.
Not friendly.
Not at all. And then he describes the group Wukong's looking for. Perfectly. Someone with a long snout and big ears.
Baji.
Someone with a dark or unlucky looking face, leading a white horse.
Sha Seng.
And a pale-faced fat monk.
Tang Monk, he nailed it.
Yep. Unmistakable descriptions. Wukong gets excited. Yes, yes, that's them.
So the old man did see them.
He did. But his next words are a real gut punch. He says, you went the wrong way. Stop looking for them. Just save your own life. Basically, give up. They're goners. Save yourself while you still can.
Wow. That's blunt.
Extremely blunt. But Wukong, you know Wukong, he's not having it.
Of course not.
He insists, the pale monk is my master. The others are my brothers. We're on this sacred pilgrimage. I have to find them.
His determination, it's unwavering.
Absolutely. And it seems to maybe sway the old man a little, because then he confirms, yes, they definitely went the wrong way, straight into a demon's trap.
Okay, so now Wukong knows how it happened. He needs the where and who.
Exactly. And he pushes for it, direct as always. What a demon. Where's his lair? Tell me so I can go demand my master back.
Does the old man tell him?
He does. He gives the specifics. The place. Tren, Golden Polished Mountain, and the cave. Dran, Golden Polished Cave.
Golden Polished Mountain, Golden Polished Cave, got it. And the demon.
He names him the Unicorn King.
The Unicorn King. Okay, a name for the enemy. Does the old man say anything else about him?
Oh, yeah. He doubles down on the warning about the demon's power, describes him again as possessing great magical power, mighty and strong.
So powerful and strong, not just one or the other.
Right. And the old man repeats his bleak outlook. He says the three are, definitely doomed this time. Kaput. And he warns Wukong himself, you go there, you'll probably get captured too. Then he finishes with this line, Shirat Jashin, basically saying, look, I'm not going to stop you, but I'm not encouraging you either. It's entirely up to your own judgment.
He lays out the danger, but leaves the choice to Wukong.
Exactly. Wukong, ever polite, even when receiving dire news, thanks the old man for the information. And then he does something interesting. He offers the old man the bowl of vegetarian food he'd just gathered.
Oh. Why does he do that?
Well, we find out immediately, because as soon as Wukong offers the food and turns to leave, poof, the old man and the servant drop their disguise.
A disguise. So they weren't just random travelers.
Not at all. The text reveals they are Inya, the local mountain god, and the earth deity for that specific area.
Whoa. Okay, local deities.
And what do? They immediately kneel down before Wukong.
They kneel to Wukong. That shows some serious respect. Or maybe fear.
Definitely respect, maybe a bit of awe. They explain why they were disguised. They say they were actually waiting for him, but they know Wukong is impetuous, quick-tempered.
Yeah, that sounds like Wukong.
And they were worried about basically offending his powerful presence if they just appeared in their true forms.
So they took the cautious approach. Smart, maybe?
Seems like it. And they also explain why they accepted the food bowl. It wasn't just politeness. They say they'll hold on to it to make Wukong lighter so he can use his magic more effectively in the fight.
Huh. Like, literally lighter.
That's the implication. Less weight, better fighting. And they add they'll give the food back to Tang Monk after he's rescued, which, they note, will demonstrate Wukong's Chuya, his utmost reverence and filial piety towards his master.
It's like they're celestial accountants keeping track of his good deeds.
Kind of feels that way, doesn't it? Wukong gives them a bit of a telling off for hiding, but he accepts their reasoning, tells them to guard the bowl well while he goes off to tackle this unicorn king.
Okay, so Wukong's tracking this demon. He gets past a cliff and heads for the mountain front.
Right, turning past the cliff, heading straight for the front, looking for that demon cave.
And the place itself. It sounds pretty desolate, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It paints a picture of, like, total isolation. You got, just rugged rocks everywhere.
Not exactly inviting.
Okay.
And green moss near the cliff. Sounds wild.
Very wild and difficult terrain. Steep cliffs, weird rocks lined up, twisting, tough paths. It's meant to feel hard to reach.
Plus, the conditions are, well, extreme. Sure, snow piled up under the cliffs.
And deep down, the water in the gorge is frozen solid. It's this harsh, icy setting. Almost like the land itself is part of the defense, you know?
After all that, he finally spots the entrance. Teska. Two stone doors.
But it's not quiet. There are Telchurb, a whole bunch of little demons just out there practicing. Spinning spears, dancing with swords.
That feels kind of bold, doesn't it? Just training out in the open like that?
It really does. Like, they're not worried. It gives you a sense of the head demon's confidence, maybe even arrogance.
Which Wukong immediately challenges. He doesn't bother sneaking. He just gets to the gate and shouts loudly.
Huh? Yeah. No need for subtlety with the great sage, right? He calls out straight to the guards. What's his line?
He basically says, Perche. You little demon, go tell your boss I'm Sun Wukong, the great sage, disciple of the Tang monk. Tell him to send my master out, unless you all want to die.
Classic Wukong, direct demand, big threat. You'd think that might scare the demon king a bit.
Not even close. The little demons run inside, and the demon king's reaction. The text says, Jiyu, he's totally overjoyed.
Overjoyed? That's unusual when Wukong shows up.
Right. And he even says, Yuokong, I was just hoping he'd come.
He wanted Wukong to come. Why?
Apparently, he left his palace to come down to the mortal world. He hadn't really had a chance to test his fighting skills.
So Wukong is like the ultimate sparring partner he's been waiting for.
Exactly. It's less about the monk, maybe, and more about proving himself. He immediately calls for his weapon, Yuho.
A 12-foot-long tempered steel spear. Okay, so he's serious about this fight.
And the description of this demon king, wow. It's really detailed. And pretty intense.
Yeah, the text really goes for it. What stands out?
Well, a single uneven horn and bright shining eyes.
Okay, got it. Horn, bright eyes. What else?
Rough skin on his head.
Ugh.
And near his ears, like black, shiny flesh. It's kind of grotesque.
Definitely sounds intimidating.
Then there's Shoag, his long tongue, sometimes touches his nose. and wide mouth, yellow tusks.
Okay, yeah, definitely not a friendly face.
His fur is hoo, like mindigo blue, and his muscles hard as steel. The text really stresses how tough he is.
And there's that interesting bit, right, where it says he's useless for, like, the usual heroic or romantic stuff.
Exactly. He's not some noble creature, but he is good for you defying heaven and shaking the earth.
So raw power, and his hands are described too.
Yeah. Hokin, dark blue, sinewy hands. And finally, his name, the Rhino King.
Rhino King, okay. And he gets his troops ready too, doesn't he?
He does. Tells the little demons, chun, chun, yeah. Basically. Get ready, advance, and you get rewarded. Retreat, and you die. No messing around. So, the Rhino King emerges. Wukong steps up, calls himself your grandpa's son again.
Always with the disrespect.
And demand his master back, he says. Your master stole my clothes, that's why I caught him, and now I'm going to steam him for food. He claims he set up a magic fairy house by the road, and the Tang monk snuck in feeling lustful and secretly put on 3 brocade cotton vests.
And then he proposes the fight, right?
Yep, trial by combat. If you can last 3 rounds against me, I'll spare your master. If not, you're going to hell. Wukong just laughs it off, ignores the vest story completely. He's like, fine by me. Come on, taste my staff. And bang, they clash. Golden cudgel up. Spear meets it, and the little demons are beating drums.
They go at it for 30 rounds. Ooh, and it's a dead heat. They actually kind of compliment each other.
Right. The demon calls Wukong Pol good monkey and mentions his heaven-disrupting skills. And Wukong calls the demon good demon who stole elixirs.
So after another 20 rounds or so.
Yeah. So maybe 50 rounds total now. The Rhino King seemed to decide he needs backup. Or maybe he's just ready for his trick. He signals the troops. Hoo-cha! Swarm him!
And Wukong's surrounded. But is he worried?
Not a bit. Totally unafraid. He's fighting them off everywhere. Hooner, blocking and parrying.
But even Wukong gets tired of swatting flies, I guess.
Seems like it. He gets impatient, basically. So he pulls out a big gun, throws the golden cudgel up, shouts, change!
And it becomes
thousands of iron rods raining down like flying snakes and pythons. It's this massive area attack.
Whoa. That usually clears the field, right?
It works on the small fry. They freak out, souls scattered, and they bolt back into the cave. Looks like Wukong's won this round.
But the Rhino King, he doesn't run.
Nope. He just laughs. This cold laugh. And then the twist. He pulls something from his sleeve.
His real weapon.
Looks like it. It's described as a Kohyu Hyohana, a bright, shiny, white ring or circle.
A ring? Doesn't sound that dangerous compared to the staff.
You'd think, but he just throws it up. Get it or catch. And there's this sound.
And what happens?
It just blanches the golden cudgel. It gathers all those thousands of rods back into the single staff and just takes it, slips the ring right over it. Gone. And suddenly Sun Wukong is standing there, completely empty-handed, no weapon.
Whoa, against a powerful demon who just casually neutralized his most iconic weapon. What does he do?
What can he do? He gets out of there. He somersaults away, escapes with his life. That's all he can manage.
And the demon
returns to his cave, victorious.
Oh!
While Wukong is left completely stumped, confused, plan gone, totally unsure what to do next.
Yeah, the chapter ends with those really telling lines, doesn't it? The Tao is 1 foot high, the demon 10 feet high.
And nature, chaotic, mind confused, mistaking home.
And pity the Dharma body has no seat. The thoughts acted upon were mistaken.
And then the classic cliffhanger.